By the book.
Okay, welcome to By the Book, the latest podcast for In the Next 17, which is our culinary arts edition. We're going to be joined with Marcus Huff this edition. Plus, we're going to show a pre-recorded interview discussion about culinary arts and food culture with Keith Daniel, already recorded at a Panera, one of the local Paneras. I actually caught him while he was eating food.
At a food place.
At a food place to talk about food. This, even though that's the culinary thing, you know, we are going to get into the culinary edition. You need to check the main actual Next 17 for all kinds of previews, recipes, special editions for the fourth quarter with Giraffe Network, including Halloween, Thanksgiving, as well as Christmas, special recipes for all those holiday, you know, goers out there that need those extra things. Check out the main thing. You can actually be reviewing the site, reviewing the actual magazine while you're listening to the By the Book.
Anything that would have to hurt you.
Yeah, intense pain. It seems to be the thing for the holidays. Speaking of pain, I was talking about Johnny Depp earlier.
You got to talk about T-Pain.
Yeah.
Auto-tune.
Yeah, exactly.
Johnny Depp. He's going to be in the new movie, the new remake of Dark Shadows, the old vampire sci-fi.
So
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, basically from 1960 to 1971.
The cheesy.
Of course it was total drama cheese. But a lot of the fans have wanted to really see it brought back.
Guess who's directing it? Tim Burton. And of course, when there's Tim Burton, there's Johnny Depp.
And Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah.
His wife is always into everything that Johnny's into whatever film he's doing. In fact, she's going to be playing Dr. Julia Hoffman, who tries to cure Barnabas of his vampirism. All I can say is I hope they don't screw this thing up and try to do any kind of True Blood or Shimmering Twilight or any kind of things. Just go with the original story concept, you know? It's either way. I don't know. And I'm a big Dark Shadows fan. I'm willing to pay for it, but I don't want them to screw this over, which is entirely possible. But
sometimes there's movie Johnny Depp can't save, whispered Tim Burton.
Yeah. I don't know. They've got some interesting. Even Alice Cooper's rumored to be in this.
What?
Yeah, they didn't give us a character title, but he's actually rumored to be in it. You know, same with Christopher Lee.
It's
Dracula.
It's like Alice Cooper like cameo in Wayne's World. Come on.
I'm hoping that's all it is. because
Will not worthy.
I don't want him bursting out into song, you know, in the middle of this. It could be worse. They could have invited Ozzy Osbourne, and we'd have spent Sharon, what's going on? That's all you need from him, you know. But I don't know. With Helena Bonham Carter and Johnny Depp, Michelle Pfeiffer's going to be in it. So, actually, Eva Green. I'm not sure who Eva Green is, but she's playing Angelique. You know, she was the witch who cursed. You have no idea what I'm talking about. Never mind.
I only see,
all those fans who know who Angelique is.
I only see, a season, because the series on Netflix, some of it, so.
Of it. Well, there's over 1,075 episodes. That's a lot of money. Okay, I bought one set of 50 episodes on CD and paid close to $50.
Your money was hurting. You was on a field day.
Exactly. My wallet reached out and slapped me, because that's a little too much to pay. But you can always go check it out, and I think Hulu's picked up some stuff. But Netflix, like you said, well, not is that Netflix current? Quickster?
No, it's actually it's on Netflix streaming, not Quickster and all that crap, so.
Oh, my. So no apologies from the people in charge, huh?
Yeah, pretty
much. Okay. Speaking of apologies that people need to receive from corporate America, and that's the people who bought into this whole DC 52 crap.
Now, from what I hear for it, I think the whole thing started because it was like a fight for rights with the stories or something like that.
Actually, I think it had to do with the Superman movies and the Batman movies with Warner Brothers as to who owned what. Because they had their hands into so much, you know, with the movie rights, that they started trying to sue them for the rights of the characters. Hmm. So, what do you do when you get sued? You throw something to the wind and start over.
Yeah.
You know. But what they did is they started over with everything.
Yeah, every series or, you know, current storyline you think of, reboot. Or it's getting a new twist of direction.
They're splitting it up with the JLA. They're going with whole new artists, new writers, everything. Individual characters get stuff. And then the Batman stuff's going on.
Superboy. Supergirl.
Okay, who is Batwoman? You have no idea.
I have no clue.
Do we care?
No.
Okay, so that's the kind of thing is they've got all these extra characters in there. I mean, they've even got the Red Lantern Corps now. After this whole Darkest Night series where they discover that every color has a ring.
Yeah, in the universe. Yeah, I like reading the Darkest Night series, but seriously, why?
It's money.
I know.
I think it's all corporate ploy. But the fact that you have Jim Lee's group, the old Wildstorm subsidiary, now you're going to end up with Voodoo and Grifter and the Authority, all available with their own restarts.
Now, let me ask you a question, people. Do you want to see another Crisis of Infinite Earths? Do you?
No, I thought the first one was supposed to solve all that. Mm. Yeah, we were wrong.
Yeah.
Because now we're having another crisis on the DC Universe. So, all I can say is definitely read and look at it before you buy it, because there's a lot of crap out there. Mm. A lot of crap. So even if your local retailer slaps you on the wrist for taking it out of that plastic little bag, you look at him and go, do you want my money? Let me re-look at this first. Mm. Because otherwise, you're going to get gypped.
You know, I think Marvel took DC to a bar and just slipped him a Mickey, and, you know.
Maybe that was Disney. It's like, here, take them, and just get them off the track. We need to make some money here. You got some good movies, but they got crappy comics.
Suddenly, Michael Eisner from Disney he's a mole for Marvel that snuck into DC.
He's a mole. Oh my gosh. That is definitely a new take. I haven't heard that name in quite some time. So, thank you for the terror of bringing back.
You're welcome.
Oh, well, what can I say? I hope they have better luck with what they're doing with this. At least maybe they'll have an opportunity to come out with some different characters, exploit some well-known artists.
Some of the previews that's caught my eye is the new Flash and also the new Static Shock. So,
okay.
For Static Shock, I was a fan with the cartoon. This was before I really got into that series, so I can't wait to see what they want to do with it. That's about it.
Okay, well, hopefully people will check it out and they can let us know.
And also, the Teen Titans kind of fused with Young Justice, and it's like a whole big mess. So,
well, even that with what they're doing with the Red Hood and the Outlaws, you know, they're pulling away the outsiders and giving them a darker edge. From what I've seen in the actual comic that came out this week, but Brett Booth is taking back over with Teen Titans, but they're giving Robin a winged cape. It's individuated feathers.
It's not really necessary.
No, and the clone of Superman, who's supposed to be indestructible, has a tattoo of a Superman symbol on himself.
He's will be all...
Yeah. Go figure that out.
Yeah.
I mean,
he'll be like American Outlaw or something like that. Yeah, like,
irritates me.
I feel like that series is going to be so angsty.
Yes, it is going to be teen drama. Mm-hmm. It's going to be teen drama.
See... Young Justice versus Degrassi. Who's going to win?
Ooh, that's a toss-up. That is a toss-up. I've seen some of those episodes of Degrassi. Seriously. That is scary crap. Mm-hmm. You know, who knew high school could be that involved?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, okay. Well, I think what we'll do now is we'll go ahead and run the actual pre-recorded interview. And I hope everybody else picks up this issue and shares it with their friends, because what we've got to say is important because we say so.
Yeah, pretty much.
Talk to you later.
Bye, y'all.
Okay. So, the culture of culinary arts.
Yes.
That's what we've been talking about. In fact, the whole next issue was about culinary arts.
Mm-hmm.
And we've read several articles, and some of our friends are highly into the addictive nature, whether it's culinary combat of these television shows and food porn,
yeah,
as everyone discusses, or sitting around and having, you know, lunch, dinner, or breakfast with friends.
Indeed.
So I guess my first question to you is, you know, as a fellow foodie,
mm-hmm,
what is your take on this new development in the attention given to food culture?
Well, I think it's really cool and exciting. And primarily, I think that's cool and exciting because there, from my perspective, there is a unique power of food to bring people together.
That's true.
It's, you know, it's difficult to expound upon that. But you can't deny it.
Right.
You know, it just seems, especially for people who get passionate about food, they definitely want to get together. They definitely want to cook together. They definitely want to dine together. I mean, that's the point of making food, is to eat the stuff.
Right.
So you could definitely say that there's definitely a power that is almost tangible about the way a meal brings people together. I'd say it's almost primal to the human psyche.
I'd have to agree with that.
You know, I mean, ancient tribes got together, food,
bread, food, fire, yeah,
and that was the way the community got together. It's how news was shared. It's how the tradition was passed down within their own cultures. It's where stories were told.
Mm-hmm.
It's how you found out what was going on with your neighbor.
Exactly.
You know, walking out just had a kid. Hoorah for him.
Very well said.
Thank you to Dancing Cloud. He brought us our meal today.
Exactly.
You know,
oh,
so, and regard, and no matter how modern we are, you know, we still have deeply embedded in us that need of community that, you know, takes us all the way back to our hunter-gatherer roots.
Right.
And I think that in many ways is where our connection with food and dining together comes from. You know, a lot of people want to talk about specifically as it applies to the family meal, but I think it goes beyond that. You look at any, you know, group of people,
right?
You know, and there's something powerful, something significant about the sharing of a meal together.
Yeah.
You know, there's an additional layer of undertones of hospitality to that, for whomever is hosting the meal.
Right.
You know, even if it's out at, like, say, a restaurant, so to speak.
Right.
You know, you still have somebody who initiates the whole thing. There's just so many undercurrents that play into our culture as a people. And, like I said, this surpasses even, you know, American, European, African, Asian.
Sure.
It's just something that's in our human element, that's ingrained in our culture and our psyche.
I'd have to agree with that, and even go so far as to say we've supplanted food from a survival nature to a social nature.
Exactly.
And I think that's really where we've moved forward in the last, I would go so far as to say the last 100 years. It's moved into a different arena.
Exactly. You know, it's almost... And I kind of, I just kind of lost where I was going with that. But
we'll come back to you. Don't worry. We'll
yeah.
keep going.
But no, it is very interesting, given the fact that in this modern setting, even though it has taken the aspect of the hunter-gatherer nature, mm-hmm, and sharing of a meal out of it, there's still all that other aspect of it forms community amongst people.
Exactly. The connection.
Exactly.
Table is still the connection. And no matter what era you're in. You know, pride in the food being gathered, mm-hmm, prepared, presented.
Exactly.
You know, and that's, like you said, it is primal. Even in the modern, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 thousand years that we've had to deal with this, whether you're dealing as a nomadic tribe out in the middle of the desert sands of Cairo,
mm-hmm,
you know, making sure someone has, you know, goat's cheese and a bit of flatbread, you know, some kind of Persian deal,
yeah.
Or whether you're walking to someone at Ruth Chris's and having a steak and baked potatoes and some veggies with a couple of dates.
It's the same thing.
Yeah,
for sure. Now, I will go so far as to say this. I think there's an even more powerful aspect to it for those people who still have to go and work hard for their food.
In fact,
and what I mean by that is not necessarily because, I guess you could say by that logic, you know, us here in America, yeah, you got to work hard for that paycheck to buy the food. No. I mean going out there and tilling the crop.
Right.
Going and raising
the
goat for the slaughter.
Exactly.
That provides the meat. So, you know, it's
it's a whole different level. Again, like you said, knowing where that that footprint is. You know, how did it get to your table? How did it get to your plate? Knowing, I think people appreciate that more if they ask the questions, you know, and are involved and want to know. I know I'm certainly more involved these days, especially knowing where the origin of recipes are coming from, or spices, or what's the history. You know, how is it connect? How am I connected in the whole culture?
And even then, even beyond just the power of a meal to bring people together, a people's history is totally written in their food.
Oh, yeah.
When you talk about the origin of recipes, yeah, you take a look at that and you track how the history of it, you're looking at the direct history of the people that founded that way of making the food.
Exactly.
It goes down into how they lived. They made it that way because that's how the land produced the food, is how, because of that, it influenced how they had to raise the food, how they had to cultivate the food, and then convert that into a meal.
Mm-hmm.
So that goes into so many aspects of their history, their cultural identity, everything as a people, especially when you're talking about ethnic cuisines.
I agree. And it's amazing. And I think if more people were to be aware and experience those at these kinds of settings,
mm-hmm.
then they would appreciate more. And they would be more tolerant because they would understand that there is a connection. Once again, food is the connection.
Yes.
You know, that's why I think breaking bread over a table, over any discussion, is the best way to soften any type of approach.
Oh, for sure.
Any kind of encounter.
Because once again, it goes back into that's how people are brought together.
Exactly. I agree 100%. What do you think about the amount of attention recently, say in the last five or six years, on the food culture? How has it affected you personally, perhaps?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I've always enjoyed food. But
I'm not denying.
I had the physique to prove it too. Well, it was still, we're not fat, we're well nourished.
Exactly. That's right. Well nourished.
But I never really had a love of cooking. It was always kind of cool, but I would have to say that this has awakened, like in myself, as it has for a lot of people, a love for cooking.
Right.
A love for food. Now, not just necessarily food for the sake of food in and of itself, but just the whole preparation of the meal.
The art.
Exactly. And
yeah.
There certainly is an art to it.
Yeah,
you ask anybody who basically makes their living as someone who provides food, especially the higher-end chefs, I guess you could say. Not to poo-poo on anybody else within the culinary field, but I mean, these are people who, you know, anybody who wakes up in the morning, eats, sleeps, and breathes food. All the way down from, you know, someone who owns a mom-and-pop restaurant to a chef at a four-star hotel.
Exactly.
You
know, passion is the same.
Exactly. But, and I think what these quote-unquote food porn has done, and I think that's just it's a poor colloquialism at that. But I think what that has done is it has awakened a passion for food in what I would refer to as, if you want to think of food as a religion, you know, the dedicants, the monks, so to speak, would be the people who make their livings in it. So this is a way of bringing that passion to the layperson, so to speak.
That's true. It's a better analogy, too.
Yeah.
More family-oriented there.
Yeah.
Excellent.
But, and so it's I mean, we're not talking facts here, but no. I bet you if you were to actually go and look at it, I bet you would find because of that, enrollment in culinary institutes have made a dramatic increase since creation of, Food Network.
Right. Yeah. Well, even like in the last, 15, 20 years, since Julia Child came onto the scene.
Yeah.
I mean, if you really look at it, hers was the first, not me too. Mr. Wikipedia here, but hers was the first cookbook that was given to a publisher, denied 3 times because it was too voluminous and they thought that Americans didn't want to learn how French people cook. She took a chance with one publisher who said, I want to know how to cook like French chefs. And they together, she tried every recipe with Julia herself and went ahead and published the cookbook. It was the most well-known cookbook since 1852, where they did a New England cookbook which told how to cook food, prepare game, as well as manage your household and etiquette.
And what was the name of this book?
I am not sure. I'm not sure. They didn't
call yourself. And you call yourself Mr. Wikipedia.
Hey, go look it up. That's all I can say is I remember catching just a moment of it because I hate Morocco, on food chefography.
Yeah.
But that moment caught my attention with the history of cookbooks. Hence my whole thing with Julia Child. But she spawned an American craze into the appreciation of other, European country as far as her cooking.
Yeah.
And she was unabashedly ashamed. And how she presented it on television and to public television and basically, she said, don't apologize for anything. You learn what not to do next time.
Yeah.
So anyone that tells you that, that's great words of advice when
Indeed.
It comes to cooking. Any last words you might have or comments, commentary?
Well, yeah, I would have to say that I hope this issue of Next awakens in you a love for food and a love for even more than just food. It's power to bring people together.
Excellent. Could have said it better myself.